When Edmund Lebrun and Florida 10 left Afghanistan, after working on development projects for 3 years, they sold some locally made cufflinks to pay for a much-needed holiday. Their small experiment turned into a wild success. When the two returned to Europe, they created Ishgar, a social enterprise that curates products made by artisans affected by war. So, how'd they do it? This is Eureka on Monocle 24. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Each week, we bring you one company's story, the early inspirations, the struggles, and the path to success. This week, Floor and Edmund tell their story.
So I arrived in Afghanistan initially to work for a consultancy firm to look into sort of big development project, UN project, World Bank project, and international donors. And I decided to go to Afghanistan to do this job, but first for the because the job was really interesting, but also because I wanted to discover a completely new country. I had lived a bit in the Middle East, but never in Central Asia. So that was for me something completely new.
When I was 18, I lived just over the border from Afghanistan in China. And when I was there, the Chinese government were destroying the old city of the town that I was living in. And so I was really moved about preserving Silk Road historic places. And I found out about this charity called Turquoise Mountain, which was restoring the old city of Kabul when I was at university. And I really wanted to go out and volunteer with them. I was initially going out to volunteer for 6 months, and I ended up staying 3 years. When I went out to work there, I was working for a charity which was restoring the old city of Kabul. And they had been working already for 6 years, finding craftspeople who had stopped working during the civil war in Afghanistan, and they were bringing them back into workshops and getting them to train other craftspeople. So the craft scene there was already starting to emerge, but it wasn't quite yet mature. And in the last 3 years, it's really taken off.
I was taking jewelry classes actually at Turquoise Mountain from an amazing group of young jewelers from Kabul. And they were teaching me how to do cufflinks, rings, necklaces. And that was when I was still a consultant. And then I actually quit my job to join Turquoise Mountain to help them out on an exhibition they were setting up in DC, the Smithsonian exhibition. So then I spent a year really close to the craftsmen, so making sure everything was the right quality for a museum show.
The idea started whilst we still had full-time jobs. It was a couple of weeks before Christmas, and we designed these very simple cufflinks. It's just one style of cufflinks. And we set up a website in a couple of days and did very little promotion. And we sold about $10,000 of cufflinks in 2 weeks. So we're like, oh, we're not expecting that. There might be something in this. People wanted high-quality things, which had a great story around Christmas time. And it was that little experience which gave us the confidence and the idea to actually set up a full-time business.
And also initially, it was really to pay for holidays post-Kabul. So it wasn't, like we're saying, it was sort of a great business idea, but it was really to have extra cash for holidays. And then we got completely taken by surprise, as Edmund was saying. And we're still doing these cufflinks right now, so.
We were planning to leave Afghanistan anyway. I think we were a bit tired of living in the country and we wanted to come back to Europe. And what always struck us was when we were in Europe was how little people knew about the country other than, you know, the stereotypical images of deserts, the Taliban, poverty. And for us, while those are very important parts of Afghanistan and very real parts, they were not the parts that got under our skin. We were much more moved by the heritage that we found there and the talented entrepreneurs that we met. And so we really wanted to bring this part of the country back to people in Europe and spread a positive story at a time when not many positive stories are coming out of the Middle East and countries like Afghanistan.
The
Peacock House is actually a name of a building in the old city, which was completely flattened during fighting between the Mujahideen and the Taliban. And it's got these beautiful carved wooden peacocks in the corners of the windows. And Turquoise Mountain, the charity we were working for, lovingly restored this building. And so for us, it was a really good symbol of historic craftsmanship, which has been rejuvenated and given a new life.
We changed the name from Peacock House to Ishkar. One of the reasons was that online, anything called Peacock House was a BNB, and we thought it would be quite difficult to compete against sort of BNBs across the US and England. And then we thought a shorter name that was also easy to pronounce in French, or that could be easy to pronounce in any languages. And Ishkar had the same power, as the same symbol as the Peacock House, as it's sort of a remarkable plant from northern Afghanistan. And then when you burn it, its ash sort of hardens, and then it can be used for the dyes in different crafts products. So it was also much more related to actually what was the business about crafts and about the beauty of crafts and about all the chemistry behind an item being made. So I think the really important thing for us is to, first of all, obviously strengthen our relationship with Afghan artisans, and especially in all these different countries that where we would want to go in, there is no legal protection for businesses, or it's very, for private businesses to get involved, it's quite difficult and taking a lot of risks. So everything is based on trust. So already, I think, showing the Afghan craftsmen that we are also a reliable partner, that it is good for them to actually partner with us, is also going to show other future craftsmen in Syria or in Iraq or Mali that this platform works. Even right now, we're doing a pop-up in Paris and a pop-up in London simultaneously. And I think that was probably a mistake of us not to have started from either London or Paris and then gradually moved to the other country. But both of us were really excited actually to bring back to our own country these images of Afghanistan. So quite difficult to pick one or the other country. I think it's a lot of time spent on that, but it's quite exciting because also when you're back in Europe, you have the energy to also just run everywhere and be in the street and talk a lot to people. And whereas in Afghanistan, you had amazing adventures and experience and new perspective on different things, but also you definitely, in Kabul at least, were stuck a bit in your guest house. So it's a good transition. It's really interesting.
I think focus has been the key thing across everything that we've done. I think less products, but more carefully chosen. And like Fleur was saying, instead of setting up in Paris and London at the same time, it would have been better to focus on one market and really nail that. So, you know, the old kind of thing of less is more. It's so tempting not to do that. It always seems more exciting to do more things, but I actually think that we could have done better if we chose just a few less products and concentrated on how to sell them in a few less ways.
Edmund Lebrun and Florida 10 there, founders of Ishkar. For more on what Floor and Edmund are up to, head to ishkar.com. And if you want to catch them in person, visit their pop-up at 93 Baker Street in London. They'll be there until the 10th of December, so don't miss out. Next week on Eureka, we meet the entrepreneur who's betting big on his new high-tech smart suitcase.
My Eureka moment was really the idea that people could pair their mobile phones with their suitcases, just like Fitbit and some of these great IoT things. I can do this and turn a travel product into a consumer electronic.
And of course, tune into The Entrepreneurs next Wednesday at 1900 London time. Eureka was edited by Toby Hammond. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. We'll see you then.